Right, so we're beginning the 12th and last parak of Chulin. The topic of it is, as the title of it indicates, Shiloh HaKan. Shiloh HaKan. The Torah tells us then, actually the Shiloh HaKadosh points out, really properly speaking, it should be pronounced Shiloh HaKain. Because Kain,
really?
Yeah, because in the pasuk it says Kan, but that's because the word over there is Kan Sipur, which means the nest of a bird. Kan means the nest of. Properly speaking, Kain means next by itself.
Kain is the next.
Yeah.
And Kan is
Kan
the
would
next.
Be the next of. Yeah. Anyway, so the Shiloh HaKadosh points that out. Nevertheless, though, the fact of the matter is people usually say Shiloh HaKan. So, okay, the Psukim, first of all, the Psukim about Shiloh HaKan and Parshat Tzeitzes, say it goes like this. Ki Yikore Kan Sipur L'Fanes. So if there happens to be a bird's nest in front of you, Baderech, on the road, B'chol E, on any tree, Ayala Oret, on the ground,
there has to be
outside of town. Well, we're going to discuss that, but wait. There are chicks or there are eggs in the nest. And the mother is resting, is sitting on the chicks or on the birds. You're not allowed to take the mother with the chicks. You have to send away the mother bird. And the children you can take for yourself. In order that should be good for you. And you'll live long. Those are the two children.
What is it? Do you have to?
So do you have to? So you're asking, do you have to do it, or is it if
yes.
you want doctor, if you want the chicks?
Right.
So that is actually an interesting thing that's discussed back and forth by a number of achroim. We'll see something about it in the Gemara later as well. But the Chavis Yor seems to be the first one who says, actually the Maharal seems to say before him as well, that it's a mitzvah chiyuvis. Regardless whether you want the contents of the nest, you find the nest, you're obligated to do this mitzvah, send away the mother bird, and then if you want the chicks and then or the eggs, then fine, take them for yourself. If you don't want them, they don't. So according to them, you have an actual mitzvah. The Chacham Tzvi also says that you have an actual mitzvah to send away the mother bird, whether you need the contents of the nest or not. On the other hand, Chacham Sofer and a number of other Achronim disagree with that, and they say that it's only a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, they say, along the lines of shechita. You're not obligated to shecht an animal, but if you want to eat meat, then you have to shecht it. The same thing over here. You're not obligated to send away the bird, the mother, but if you want the eggs or the chicks, then you have to do that. You have the Chavis Yoyer and the Chacham Tzvi on one side of it, and you have the Chacham Sofer and a number of other Achronim on the other side of it. The Chavis Yoyer and the Chacham Tzvi say you have to send it away regardless, and the Chacham Sofer and others say you don't have to. It's just if you want the eggs or the chicks, then this is the prerequisite. So is it a mitzvah chiyuvis, or is it a mitzvah chiyuvis, meaning it's a mitzvah that you're obligated to do regardless, or is it a mitzvah that if you want to be able to the same way as if you want to eat meat, you have to shech the same way if you want the eggs or the chicks, you have to send away the mother. So it's machlokas achronim in that point. Reasons behind the mitzvah. So it's interesting, actually, there is a Mishnah in Brachos and also in Megillah that says that if a person in davening says, Hashem, you have rachmanus on the mother bird, so just like that, have rachmanus on us, we stop him from saying that. He's not allowed to say that in tefillah, which makes it sound like the reed, because in other words, one idea is, the Gemara mentions, because it amounts to saying that he knows the reason for the mitzvah, that the reason is that Hashem has rachmanus on the bird. And you can't do that because ultimately we don't know the reasons for mitzvahs. With that said, there was a vast amount of discussion among the Rishonim and Achronim about possible reasons behind the mitzvah. Some of them do talk about it's an idea of Rachmanus. The Ramban says, for example, it's not so much a Rachmanus on the bird, it's more to inculcate Rachmanus in us, that we should learn to be not cool people. So there are a couple of Rishonim also talk about that. I think the Chinuch, for example, talks about the idea that, so to speak, like taking the mother and the chicks, taking two generations at once, is like the beginning of making the species extinct. And since we know that Hashem wants every species to continue living in the world, then therefore, so it's one thing to take one generation, but not to take both of them at the same time. And there's a variety of other moral and other reasons that are given by Rishonim and Achronim. One interesting thing the Zohar says about it is that actually just the opposite. It's just the opposite of a thing of Rachmim. When the mother bird is sent away from her children, she feels very bad about it and she cries about it. And therefore, the Zohar says that evokes Rachamim in Shemayim for the Jewish people, because the Shekhinah is like a mother bird, and when we're like the eggs or the chicks. So therefore, when you send away the mother bird, and she's crying for her children that are gone, then that evokes Rachmanus of Hashem on behalf of the Jewish people. Yeah. Let's start.
Any bird or one bird?
Well, we're going to see in the Gemara. Right, in the Mishnah and the Gemara. We'll see. So the Mishnah starts off. Shaloh hakan noig ba'aretz v'chutzla. It's the same formula that we've had in several prokrim of Amasekta so far. That shaloh hakan applies in Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael, which again there's no chiddush in that because it's a chovet haguf and those in general apply everywhere. So we'll see in the Gemara. B'fnei abayis for shaloh b'fnei abayis. It applies whether the Beit Hamikdash is standing or not. B'chulin avaloi b'mukdashi, it applies only to chulin birds, not to birds of kodshim, for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. Mishnah continues, chomer b'kisu adam m'shaluach hakan, there is a certain chomer in the din of kisu adam versus shaluach hakan, and vice versa. Why are we comparing dafka to kisu adam? Because kisu adam and shaluach hakan are two mitzvahs that we have in our masechta that apply to birds and not so much to other species. Shaloh HaKan applies only to birds, and Kisei Adam applies only to birds and wild animals. So therefore, so the Mishnah is comparing and contrasting them. So there's a Chumrah in Kisei Adam. Shekisei Adam noig b'chayo v'oif, because Kisei Adam applies not only to birds, but also to wild animals. B'mezuman v'she'en mezuman, it also applies whether the wild animal or the bird is pre-prepared for you, is already ready for you to take, or not. Namely, in other words, it doesn't matter, for example, with the bird, for example, you do kisi adam equally much, whether it's a domestic or whether it's a domesticated bird or a wild bird, we know when you do kaparis, for example, we do kisi adam with the chickens, even though they're fully domesticated, because the mitzvah applies equally well, whether they're domesticated or not, and the same thing with chaya, as opposed to shaloh hakan ain't a noyeg elabov, shaloh hakan, first of all, there is a kula in it, that it only applies to birds, doesn't apply to wild animals. And number two, you could argue that, for example, suppose you had a wild animal, suppose you found, for example, a deer together with a bunch of its horns, maybe you would be obligated to send away the deer, but no, because the pasuk only mentions that connection with birds. So that's a chomer in kisi adam, which doesn't apply to shaloh hakan. The ein noyeg ela b'she'en mezuman, and also shaloh hakan only applies where the birds, where the nest wasn't already ready for you, where it wasn't already pre-prepared for you. What does that mean? Ezer she einim mezuman. So what does that mean that it's not prepared for you? Suppose, for example, the birds themselves don't have to be a wild species. They can be a domesticated species, but that went feral, that ran away and set up a nest someplace outside the house. For example, geese or chickens, which are domesticated birds, but shekinin or bepardes that set up a nest in an orchard. So like they rebelled, they left the house, they're running away and they're not coming back, and they set up house out in the open. And even though the orchard that they set up their nest in may still belong to you, but the point is it's not considered mezuman because they can easily run away. As opposed to when it's in the house, it's easy to catch it. By the way, the Gemara is going to deal with, towards the end of the Masechta, the Gemara is going to deal with if it's in your orchard or in your property, one Shakinian Chassel on it. We'll deal with that later on Chuk Mamalach on the base. If you have Kinian Chassel, then it would be Mezuman. But then it would be Mezuman. Okay, anyway. Fine. So Shaloh HaKan only applies when it's not Mezuman. So for example, again, you have these birds that are domesticated species, but these particular ones have become feral and are out in the open. Avlam kinenu b'bayis. But if they didn't rebel and run away, if they made a nest in the house, v'chein yone hadesios, and the same thing, hadesios doves, which are fully domesticated, doves usually, hadesios is a subspecies of doves. We'll talk about them on Kuflama Tess on the Bays, why they're called that and what the story with them is. Anyway, the point is, doves usually are not doves, pigeons, whatever, are usually not completely domesticated. You may set up a coop or a birdhouse or whatever for them, a shovach, as we find in many places in Chaff, but for example, they still go and forage for their own food and whatever. They just fly, you know, they can fly wherever they want. They can set up a nest in whatever birdhouse they find, as opposed to these yone hadesios are fully domesticated. They live with people.
They come back wherever.
So those kind, potter, so those kind would be potter because they stay put with you. Potter mishaluach. So therefore they're potter from shaluach. Well, the pigeon, doves, whatever. Pigeon, doves, basically two different words for the same bird, yeah. Okay. So yeah, so there's a difference between regular pigeons or doves, which are more semi-domesticated, versus these hadesios doves, which are fully domesticated. Okay. So those would be potter because, again, it's mezuman. It's already pre-prepared for you. Another din, oif toy, this is what you're asking about, different kinds of birds. Oif tome potim l'shalayim. If we're talking about a non-kosher species of bird, you're potter from doing shaluach hakan. Okay? The mitzvah of shaluach hakan only applies to kosher species, for reasons that we'll see in the morning. If you find an eagle with its nest, you're entitled to take it. Oif tome roivet al beitze oif tahor. What if you find a non-kosher bird nesting, brooding on the eggs of a tahor bird?
How would you know?
You would know. What do you mean? First of all, we learned earlier in the Masechta that the eggs of kosher and non-kosher species often look a little bit different. No, but still, you can see. You can generally see them a little. You can still see some of the eggs around them a little bit. Whatever. Suppose you have some way of knowing that. Okay. You're looking from above. Let's say you happen to be on a higher tree and you notice a nest on a lower tree, whatever. So if you have a non-kosher bird nesting, brooding on the birds on the eggs of a kosher bird, or the tahor rovis al beitza of tamei, or the other way around, a tahor species brooding on the eggs of a non-kosher species, potter from the shalayach. In both those cases, you potter from shaluach hakan. It has to be that they're both kosher species. Whether it has to be the same species is actually a bit of a discussion among the Mephoshim. It has to be a female bird. Does it necessarily have to be the mother of these particular eggs? Not necessarily. We'll get to it at some point in the parak, I think, but there is actually a machlokas of the mafarshim on that point. Okay. What about koirei zachar? What about a male koirei? So what is a koirei? Rashi, the gears that we have in front of us in Rashi says that it's a tome species of bird. However, that wouldn't work because we just said a tome species, you're potter anyway. So the gears has changed to her, actually. It should be the maram changing it to toher. So a koire is a kosher species of bird. In English, it's called a partridge. It's some kind of bird, whatever. So the point is that zohar, in that species, the male also sits on the eggs and hatches them. Usually in most species, it's only the female that does that. With this particular species, the koire, the partridge, the male does it as well.
Other
people's birds. So Rashi also mentions, Rashi mentions another point that any kind of koire, male or female, sometimes sits on other birds' eggs. That's true. Yeah, but that's a separate matter. So there are two different issues over here. In other words, one, that it's a male, and number two, the eggs aren't necessarily its own. Anyway, Rebbe Eliezer says, nevertheless, you chayev to do shiloh hakan with that male koire. But chum poter and the chum say you're poter for reasons that we'll discuss in the Gemara. Okay. So there's more sorts of stuff. Now, we've had already, this is the sixth perek of Or Masechta, the 12th prakim, this is the 12th perek of Or Masechta, and it's the sixth one that began with a formula like this, that this particular mitzvah is noeg ba'aretz of a chut ba'aretz with nabayis, for shiloh with nabayis. We had it in the fifth perek about oseves v'noi. We had it in the sixth perek about Kisi Adam, seventh perek about Gid Anosha, then we had it in the tenth perek about Zuri L'Chayayim Mekeva, the 11th perek about Reisha Lagez, and now is the 12th perek about Shiloh HaKam. So, Rav Ovin and Rav Miyasha. So Rav Ovin and Rav Miyasha stated different points. They're not actually arguing, Rashi says, but each one stated a different point regarding this formula. One of them says you should know that kol hecha detnan ba'aretz v'chutz la'aretz, any time in these six prakim where it mentions that a certain mitzvah applies in Eretz Yisrael and in chutz la'aretz, shaloi l'tzarech, generally it's not necessary to say that because most of these mitzvahs that we are talking about are chovas aguf. All these mitzvahs we've talked about are chovas aguf. They're all things, they have nothing to do with the land of Eretz Yisrael, so there's no reason to think they should apply only in Eretz Yisrael. Levad mereshis ageiz, with the exception of reshis ageiz, and that is, there it needs to say, the Mishnah needs to say that it applies in Eretz Yisrael. And outside Eretz Yisrael, la poki nid Rabbi Loi, because the Tana of the Mishnah wants to tell us that he disagrees with Rabbi Loi, which we learned in the previous perek, drama reshes agez and anoy galabaret, where we learned before that he says reshes agez applies only in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, so when it comes to reshes agez, the Mishnah had to mention that it applies in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, because according to that Tana it does. But all the other ones, it only mentions it in order to be parallel, in order to use the same formula by order. By the other ones, there's no chiddush, for example, in saying that shaloh hakan applies in chutz la'aretz, that gid anosha applies in chutz la'aretz, that oseh ves v'noi, etc. By all those, there's no chiddush. The only reason it needed to be mentioned by Reish Lagez, and Tosfos points out also by Matanis, because Rabbi Loi also held that Matanis also don't apply in chutz la'aretz, and because of that, therefore, the Mishnah used it in all the other cases as well for parallelism. Okay. So that's one. V'chad Omer, then between Rav Abba and Rav Miyasha, the other one pointed out a different detail called Hecha the Tznan B'fnei Abayis, for Shalev B'fnei Abayis. Again, in all these six prakim, when it says that a certain mitzvah applies when the Beit HaMikdash is standing and when it's not standing, is also Shalev L'Torach. It's also, generally speaking, not necessary. Levad Me Oisev Esbenoi, with the exception of the first one in the series, which is Oisev Esbenoi, the fifth parak. Why do we need to specify that Oisev Esbenoi applies even when the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed? Sakhadai Hamina, because you would think to say, right, Hoyle Ben Yonah de Kodshim, because the context of Oisev Esbenoi is in connection with Sukkim on Kodshim. We learned over there from Sukkim that it applies to Kholim as well, so we began to sure, but nevertheless, we would have thought it's in the context of Sukkim on Kodshim. So therefore, you would think this Manda Ik Kodshim Nino, maybe it only applies when there are Kodshim that are offered. This Manda Laka Kodshim Nino, when there's no Kodshim being offered, maybe Oisev Esbenoi doesn't apply. Kamash Malon, that is why the Mishnah over there had to say that it applies to Tnei Abayis for Shalev Tnei Abayis. And again, once it uses that formula there, then it repeats the same formula in all the other ones as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So far we understand why it needs to say Ba'aretz v'chutz la'aretz, because you have one case where if there's a chiddush in that, or two, according as Tosfos points out, you have one case where it has to say the Tnei Abayis for Shalev Tnei Abayis, and because of that, all the other five also have that. The Tavayu Amri, then both Rav Oven and Rav Miyasha together said another detail on this. Kol Hechad Tznan B'Cholin of a Mekdoshin, in each of these six cases when it says that the din applies to Cholin and not Kodshim, actually it didn't say it by all six of them, but whatever, whichever one it said by, L'Tzorech, it's necessary to say, Levar Mi Gid HaNosha, Levad Mi Gid HaNosha, except for Gid HaNosha. Gid HaNosha, we didn't have to be told that it applies to Kodshim, because Pshita would be fairly obvious. What would you think? Mishum de Ikdash Kokalei Ikka Gid HaNosha? I mean, hey, what would you think? Because you were Makdash the animal, therefore the Issa of Gid HaNosha goes away? Obviously not. So therefore, over there it doesn't need to say that it applies to Cholin and Kodshim. It only says it because by some of the other ones, like for example here, Shiloh HaKan, it has to mention that it applies to Cholin and not Kodshim, and also, for example, in the previous parak about Rish Lakeh, and therefore by Gid HaNosha it mentions that it applies to Cholin and Kodshim.
Okay. You could, I mean, technically you could say it doesn't apply to...
No, why would, well, that's one second, that's what the Gemara answers. But that's what the Gemara asks. The lab or kingdom of Lodis Kodshim, what are you talking about that it didn't need to say it by Gid HaNosha? Actually, we had a whole discussion about it at the beginning of Peret Gid HaNosha, and we said over there that actually the reason why the Mishnah had to tell us, that you were arguing that of course Gid HaNosha applies to Kodshim, just because you were Makdash the animal shouldn't make the Issur go away. And we had a whole long discussion about it, about Issur Chalal Issur, and so on and so forth. And we said that we were talking about a case over there of the unborn animal of Kodshim. So you have the mother was, the mother was designated as a korban. And therefore, so the issue of Kodshim comes before the Gid ever came into existence, because it takes a while after the baby starts forming in the womb for the Gidim to form. So we ended up saying there that there was a reason for it to say that that's not such an obvious thing. Okay, so the Gemara says, oh, my time, oh, Kibna, new, and after all, what's the reason why we had to Shteladine, why we had to explain that Mishnah is talking specifically about Vladis Kodshim, rather than just saying more obvious, the whole reason was Lav Mishum de Kashalon, Lav Mishum de Kashalon, Lav Mishum de Kashalon, Lavisni. Because it was precisely because we had this question, why should it have to say that it doesn't apply to Kodshim if it should be fairly obvious? And that forced us to say we have a non-obvious case where it would apply, namely Vodis Kodshim. Well, Me'ikra Nami Le'tikshalach. Well, therefore, actually, what Rabbi Yasha and Rabbi Loi are telling us...
It had not been an
unworked... We were over there, in Peret Gid HaNosha, we thought that there was a specific reason why the Mishnah had to mention that it applies to Cholin and to Kodshim, because you would think it's fairly obvious that it applies to Kodshim, and so we got into a whole discussion over there, and we ended up saying that, which is not we ended up saying, actually, the Gemara actually had a different answer to Machzana, but whatever, the point was that one of the possibilities we brought up over there was that we're talking about a baby of Kodshim, Hakob of Lodis Kodshim Askinen, and we were saying, therefore, that the Tana of that Mishnah held that Gid HaNosha applies to an unborn baby as well, and anyway, we said that the Gidim don't form after the rest of the baby starts forming, and therefore you have the issue of Kodshim comes before the issue of Gid HaNosha, and therefore it's able to be chal on it,
etc.
So that's the thing. But after all, what forced us to say that? What forced us to get into that whole discussion was because we were wondering, why on earth does it have to tell us that it doesn't apply to Kodshim? Well, now that we have all Gemara, Me'ikra nami le'tichalach. Now, actually, what the Mishnah, what the Gemara is telling us, what Rabbi Yasha and Rabbi Albin are telling you, there's no reason to ask the question to begin with. I did a ton of l'chardach, ton of nami shalei l'chardach. Because you have certain ones of these prakim where it has to say that it applies to cholin and to kodshim, or that it applies to cholin and not to kodshim. So therefore, automatically it added it over there to be parallel. So in other words, we don't have to say that in Teret Didanosha it mentioned that it applies to Kodshim because we're talking about some unusual case like Vladis Kodshim where we would think maybe it doesn't apply and the Chiddush is that it applies. No. The Mishnah is just mentioning it because over here in our Mishnah, for example, in our Mishnah and in the previous Teret, it had to mention, and in the two previous Prophim, for example, it had to mention that certain Dinim apply to Cholin but not to Kodshim. So therefore, for parallelism over there, it said it applies to Cholin and to Kodshim. No, not that there was meant to be any Chiddush in it. That's Rav Yasha and Rav Ovin.
So over there we
mentioned some case that the Mishnah would have to tell us that it applies to Kodshim where we might not otherwise have known. But now, based on our Gemara, we're saying you don't need that. The Mishnah just mentioned that it applies to Kodshim because it's being parallel with the other Prakim that it mentions that it doesn't apply to Kodshim. Next, the Mishnah had said B'chulin avaloy mevokdashin. The Mishnah had said that Shiloh Hakan applies only to Chulin, not to Kodshim. So the question is, am I loy? Why indeed not? Why shouldn't Shiloh Hakan apply to Kodshim? The reason is D'amakros shalayach b'shalach ha'tahim, because the pasuk says you should send away the bird, implying the mother bird, implying the misha atam et suva l'shalchay. The mitzvah only applies to a bird where you have a mitzvah to send it away. As opposed to when the bird belongs to Hekdesh, she'iyatam et suva l'shalchay. You don't have a mitzvah then to send it away. Elalavia le'degizba. You're obligated to bring it to the treasurer of the Beit Mikdash because it belongs to Hekdesh. So Tosfos quotes from Rashi, although we don't have that in the Rashi in front of us, that what the Gemara means is that if the bird belongs to Hekdesh and you were to just send it away, there's no guarantee it's going to return. Somebody else might find it. He's going to have no idea it belongs to Hekdesh, and then he's going to end up using it, and he's going to end up committing me'ilah. So the Torah would never tell you to send without knowing. So the Torah wouldn't tell you shlach l'takala. The Torah wouldn't tell you that you should send away the mother bird where it's going to end up that somebody else is going to end up stumbling over it and committing an aveda unknown. Tosfos says that no. So therefore, we have to say that that's what it means. That can't mean that's why if the mother bird belongs to Hekdesh, it would be possible. Tosfos disagrees with that for a couple of reasons. One of them being that the Gemara didn't mention that point. The Gemara is just saying that you have a mitzvah to bring it to the Gizbar. So okay, Tosfos says that what it means is exactly that. Hekdesh, you have a mitzvah to bring it to the Gizbar. Therefore you can't be sending it away. Okay. Fine. Omer Ravina. So Ravina says by the same logic. Hilkach, therefore, we can derive from that another din. Oif tohur shahore gas nefesh. Suppose that a kosher bird, as we said in the Mishnah, the din of the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan applies only to kosher species. So suppose a kosher bird, shahore gas nefesh, killed a person. Where? Now that's, whatever, it could happen, yeah. No, I didn't hear. Oh, I didn't hear. Okay. Anyway, so it happens. And the same when the Torah tells us that an ox that gores a person has to be killed, has to be given skila. The same way, the same thing applies to any other behemoth chayav oif. So there's actually a Mishnah I think in Adius that mentions that some of the chachamim gave Adius about there was a case where a chicken pecked a hole in a baby's skull and killed it, and they brought it to base and gave it skila. So over here you have suppose then that this bird killed a person, then it ran away, and you find it in a nest. So that's potter from the shiloach. So you'd be potter from shiloach hakan because you have to execute that bird. My time, adama kras shalayach the shalach ha'taim. So Ravina is saying same logic as the bird that belongs to Hekdesh, because the potter is saying send away the mother, implying a mishata mitzvah l'sholchay. Only that only applies we have a mitzvah to send it away. Yotzezeshi yata mitzvah l'sholchay, as opposed to in this case, there's no mitzvah to send it away. Just the opposite. El la'avir le'beis din. You're supposed to bring it to beis din and have it given skila.
Which
pasuk
did we say that? Did you have to?
Well, the pasuk is skila by a shirt. It's sokol yishtak al asher. The Gemara mentions that the Mishnah mentions in Babakana that we learn by Gzeira Shabbos from Shabbos that applies to other behemoth chayes as well. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara hechidom. Okay, but what's the scenario over here that you're talking about that this bird killed somebody and therefore you're saying that you have to bring it to Beis Din? Now, remember, with a shur or any animal that kills a person, or for that matter, when a person commits a crime or whatever, you don't right away, you don't right away go and execute them. What do? You first, you have to bring them to base, then they have to be judged, and only if they're convicted, then, yeah. So what's the scenario over here? If we're talking about that there was already the Gemar Din, based in it already judged the case, found that the bird had takadonet, there were Adim, etc. And by the way, when Rashi mentions the point that the bird ran away, Marshal, another Achronim talk about, the idea is because Rashi is following an opinion in the Gemara in Bava Kamma that a bird that's Hester would be potter from Misa, only if it belongs to somebody. Therefore, Rashi is forced to say that the bird belonged to somebody at the time that it killed, and then it ran away, and then it ran. According to that, you have an opinion. No, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is like the Chachamim in Bava Kamma that even a Hefker bird would be Chayav Misa. But here, Rashi is following the opinion. Yet. So if we're talking about there was already a Gemar Din, based in already paskin that this bird needs to be executed, well then, Baruch Tolahu, then it's already something that needs to be killed. So therefore, in other words, Rashi says, so how could it have run away? What's the scenario then that you're talking about where it was already convicted and based in, and then it ran away and set up a nest? A number of the other Rishonim, right, so a couple of the other Rishonim asked, what do you mean? Of course, bird can escape. So the Rishwa and the Ran talk about different other possibilities. Another one possibility is they mention that once the bird has been convicted by Beis Din, now you don't have to bring it back to Beis Din to be killed anymore. Now anybody can kill it. It's the same way as when a person is convicted by Beis Din, they're considered at that point they're a dead man walking and anybody can kill them. It would be the same thing over here. And another answer is similar to what we were saying before, similar to what Torah just brought in the name of Rashi, that of course you would. Of course you're not going to send it away. It would be a shalach l'sakala. You'd be sending it away just the opposite, where somebody is going to find it, not know that it was convicted, and they're going to end up having hana from it, and it's also the hana.
So someone who's convicted and escapes, you can kill it anyway?
Anyway, right. So it must be, we're talking about that the Gemar Din had not happened yet, so the case is being tried, but they haven't yet convicted, and therefore, Boi La Asuya La Beijin, and nevertheless, you have a mitzvah. Yeah, we will. Again. Boi La Asuya La Beijin, so we have to bring now the bird to Beis Din, the Kiyumi, they will be out to Haram, and thereby fulfill the pasuk that you should expunge you should eradicate the evil from your midst. So in other words, So that's what we're saying. So we're talking. If the bird was already convicted, then of course Shiloh Hakan doesn't apply to it. But even where it wasn't convicted yet, nevertheless, you don't have a mitzvah of Shiloh Hakan. Why? Because you have a mitzvah to bring it to Beis Din so that it can be tried. And therefore, so that's Ravina's point. Therefore, that oif tar shahogas and nefesh, even if it only killed but hadn't yet been tried and convicted, nevertheless you're potter from shaloach hakan. By the same logic as the bird of hektish, where you're potter because you're supposed to be bringing it to the gizbar. Over here, you're supposed to be bringing it to Beis Din to be tried.
Okay. And that's what we get.
So now the question is, hi mukdash and hesidami. Okay, what's the scenario over here where you're talking about birds, where you're talking about a bird or eggs or whatever that belong to hesh? Ilema to have like kandasech beisteva akdashay. Are you talking about that he had a nest in his house and he was makdash the contents of the nest? Can't. Then you're not chayav in shaloach hakan. We said in the Mishnah, we said that one that's pre-prepared for you is not chayav in shaloach hakan. If it's in your house, it's pre-prepared. So are we talking about that you just found a nest out in the open in a place where it's not in a place where it's not nixna to you, and then you will mock the ship without actually taking ownership of it first? In that case, how is it kaddish? You would need if you have, for example, if there's kinyan chaser, for example, well then it's called mizuman. And if you didn't have a kinyan on it yet, then how is he able to be mock the ship? The pasuk uses an expression in Parshas Bechukotai. It says if a person is makdash his house, implying we learn a binyan out from that. Ma beisay birushosay akol birushosay. Just like a person's house belongs to him, the same thing. Anything else he wants to be makdash has to be in his possession. Here the nest is not in his possession yet because he found it out in the open. So what is the scenario that you have where you could have that you could have been makdish the contents of the nest before the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan comes into play? Either it was in your property and it belonged to you, but then Shiloh HaKan doesn't apply, or it's not on your property and then you didn't acquire it yet, so you couldn't have been makdish it. That's what we have to figure out. The answer is, Ella, so let's see. So are we talking about maybe that he picked up the baby birds, the chicks, and he declared them hektish, which, okay, he picked them up, he was zochem them, and then vahodur hadrinu, and then he put them back in the nest, and the mother returned to them, and now you're saying that he falls for shalom akan because the chicks are kodesh, because the chicks are hektish. The question is, forget about hektish. Even if the case was that all of them were entirely chulin, you wouldn't be chayav in shalom akan. It's honor, it's not really, it's mishnah. If you had taken the chicks, you picked them up, you were zocher in them, then you put them back in the nest, then the mother bird came and perched on them again, then you potter from shalom akan. Forget about hektish.
Why are you potter?
Because the Tana, or the Tana, we learned the Mishnah later on in our parak. Not all Sabonim, if he took the babies, Vech Ziron, and then he put them back, Vech Ziron Lakan, and he put them back in the nest, Vachaka Chazra Eimalehen, and then the mother bird returned to them, Potim in the Shalayach, and he's Potim for Shalach Akan, as we'll see in a couple of months. So if he had done that, he'd already be Potim for Shalach Akan anyway. It doesn't matter whether he was Machdish the birds or not. So that's the thing. We have to figure out, what is the scenario where the only thing that Potters him from Shalach Akan is the fact that something over here is Hedish? So far, we don't seem to have any such case.
If
the nest is in his possession already, then it's Mizuman. We're not talking about the nest itself. We mean the content of the nest, the birds or the chicks. But how was he coining them? If he was coining them, again, if he was coining them, if they were in his property, then it's Mizuman. Then he's Potter. If they're not yet in his property, and he wasn't koina them yet.
If he owns
the tree, that's fine. But it's not koina for him because it's not chosur on mishameres. It's not a gourd of chosur. So it's not nifna to him. Fine, but then he doesn't have the ability to make it hektish yet. So what is the scenario where he has it in his possession, is able to make it hektish, but nevertheless shalom hakan still applies? So. So we have to be talking about that the case is not that he picked up the chicks first. He picked up the mother bird first, which he wasn't allowed to do, granted, but he did that. The Akdisha, then he was Makdisher, the Hodra, and then he put her back in the nest. Well then, Me'ikra Ichayev Le B'Shiluach Mekameh Da'akdisha. Well then, in that case, he is already Chayev in Shiluach Hakan before he was Makdisher. So just because he was Makdish, it doesn't take away the mitzvah. So yes, it's true at this point now this bird is Kodshim, but nevertheless, the fact that he picked it up beforehand, when he picked it up, we know it, okay, we have like this. The psukim that we mentioned before mentioned lois tikacha'im alabonim, you're not allowed to take the mother with the chicks, and then the pasuk continues, shalayach shalach ha'im v'etabonim tikachloch, you send away the mother and you take the chicks. At the end of our parak, in a couple of blocks, we're going to say that this is an example of a lavan nitek la'esteh. If the person took the mother bird, he was over on a lo'esteh, but now he has to make up for that lo'esteh by sending her away. And actually, by the way, we'll talk about then, Bez Hashem, that for example, if he actually did something that prevents the Shiloh HaKan from being done after that. For example, he killed the mother or whatever, then he would actually be Chayav Malchus, because then he was over on a lo'esteh and he wasn't able to make up for it with the esteh. Anyway, the point is over here, if he picked it up, was Makdish it, put it back, okay, now it's Hektish. So what? The fact is, he was already over on the Loiseth there. He still has the Mitzvah Saseh. Why does it go away? Just because it's Hektish. And we know that. The Tanyur of Yerichan and Yosef. This concept that just because you were Makdish in between doesn't take away the Chiyuv that existed before you were Makdish. The Tanyur of Yerichan and Yosef. Hektish Chayav HaKach Shotah. If a person was Makdish, a wild animal, and then he shechted it, potim al-chassis, and then he potim kisi adam, because we look back in the parak on kisi adam, we said that it doesn't apply to mukdashin. On the other hand, shachtav achakas atisha, but it's not so much because it doesn't apply to kodshim, I mean, it is true, it doesn't apply to kodshim, but actually, it actually points out, we learned in the Gemara over there, the point is, shchita she'enu ru'uya, because these kodshim, once you shechted it, without having been poided, first, if you poided, it's not kodshim anymore, but if you shechted it without being poided, it's now also b'ana. So it's called shchita she'enu ru'uya. It's a shchita that doesn't function to be able to make it mutter to be eaten, because it's also b'ana. That's not called shchita. So, shchita she'enu ru'uya. If you shecht kodshim without being poided then they're also b'ana. So in that case, then, on the other hand, shochta v'achakas tisha, on the other hand, if he shechted the animal and then was machdashit after it shechted, which fine, he's machdashit the bedek abayis, the meat of it now belongs to the fund of the Bismikdash, chayev l'chafes, then he's chayev to do kisi adam, I now is kodshim, doesn't matter, shekhan is chayev v'kisi kodesh yobu l'day hektish, because he was already chayev in kisi before it became hektish. So by the same logic over here, he was chayiv in Shiloh HaKan before he was makdish the mother. Why should being makdish the mother at this point pater him? So we still haven't found a case yet where it should apply.
And we thought that initially?
No, well, we thought that. That's what we thought. We thought that if you pick up the mother and a makdish her and then put her back, then the only reason you're pater is because now the mother is kodshim. But we're saying that, no, actually in that case, you would be chayiv. Even though the mother is kodshim, but nevertheless, when you first picked her up, you were still chayiv in the mitzvah, and therefore the mitzvah doesn't go away after that. So we still don't have a case yet, apparently, where, and we still don't seem to have a case yet, where the you would be chayiv in Shiloh HaKan, and the only reason you're potter is because there's hechdish involved over here. So what is the case? So, Rav Omar, so Rav says he was the answer. What is the case the Mishnah is talking about? The makdish peres shoychoi umodu. Suppose that the person was makdish the young pigeons in his birdhouse, that he was makdish them for kedushas mizbeach. He was makdish them as an ola, and then when they grew up a little bit and they're able to fly, then they flew off and they went and nested someplace else. So now, what happens? Now we have the scenario is clear. They belonged to him originally, therefore he was able to be makdish them. Now later, any birds, well, as long as they belong to him, they belong to him. They were nesting in his birdhouse. It's Koine Kinyan Potter. No, they're not fully domesticated. They're the regular kind of pigeons that go here and there. But nevertheless, at the time, they were in his birdhouse. So he has ownership of them. So he was able to remastish them. Later on, they ran off. Okay, now they're not Muslim. So had they been Chulin, then you would be Chayim. Because they're Kodshim, then therefore you're Potter. That would be the scenario. So, yeah.
So they were in his possession.
That's how he was able to remastish it. Then they flew away. Then they set up a nest of their own someplace else.
And they came back.
And no, they didn't come back. Now you found them, but now they're Muslim. Now they're not Muslim. Now they're not Muslim. Now they're not pre-prepared for you because they weren't in any place in your possession.
You take them back.
So now that's the point. Rav is saying because they're kodshim, you potter.
From
Shiloh HaKan, that's what we're saying. No, you're obviously you're still going to have to bring them, you're going to have to bring them to Hesed. Well, actually, not necessarily would you actually bring them as a korban, because once pigeons grow older, they're possible for a korban anyway. But after we said we lived in Zin Zvachim, after they grow yellow feathers around their necks or whatever, yeah. And it actually points out that's why Rav uses the expression peros chokhoi, which means the young pigeons in the birdhouse, because it was older pigeons the fossil for a carbon anyway. Okay, so that's Rav's explanation. Well, Shmuel Omar, Shmuel says a different answer. But makdish tamer gilti the bedek abayis. Suppose a person is makdish his chicken to bedek abayis. Chickens can't be brought as korbanos, but he's makdish it for bedek abayis, where it belongs to the fund of hekdish. And again, then it ran off and set up a nest of its own. So b'shleima Shmuel lo amar to Rav. So I can understand why Shmuel doesn't want to use Rav's explanation to come mukim lo b'kodesh bedek abayis, because Shmuel wants to inform us that even though when it's kodesh bedek abayis, it's only kedushas damim, nevertheless it's still potter. Because of the logic we said before that you're supposed to be bringing it to the giver.
Rav would say
we're talking about kedushas guf. Shmuel is talking about kedushas damim. So Shmuel doesn't like Rav's explanation because he would say, fine, Rav, you're right. In your case, it would be potter, but there's no chiddush in that. It's kedushas guf. Of course you're potter. In my case, it's only kedushas damim because it was a chicken, and nevertheless, you're still potter. That's why Shmuel. Yeah.
And he doesn't agree with that. Right?
Well, that's the question. Elo Rav, my time alone, Amaka Shmuel. So why doesn't Rav use Shmuel's case that he was makdish the chicken? The answer is Amalach Rav, Davka Chapatri Mishaluach. You know when Davka, I say it's possible for Shaluach HaKan, when Peres Shodkoi, only in the case that I mentioned, where you have young pigeons that were in the birdhouse, the Kodshim is there, because then their Kodshim is there. And therefore, Kibben to Kadshi, Kedusha Zagguf. Now, since they have a higher level of Kedusha, because they have Kedusha Zagguf, because they themselves are supposed to be brought as a carbon, therefore, like Poko Kedusha Sayo Minayhu, therefore the Kedusha doesn't go away from them, even when they run away. They still belong to Hekdish, and therefore they're still potter. Rav is continuing. Abu Makdish, time to go to the Bedek Abayis. But Rav would say, if you Makdish the chicken to Bedek Abayis, the Lav Kodshim is there. And there it's not Kodshim is there, because you don't bring chickens as Kodshim. The Kedusha is Domim Ba'almahu. There it's only Kedusha is Domim. It's only the monetary value of it as Kedusha. Well, Kibben the murder, Poku Kedusha Sayu. So Rav will say, once they run away, then the Kedusha goes away. once the Kedusha goes away, then sure, they're Chayiv and Shiloh HaKam. They ran away after they've been designated, but nevertheless, now they ran away. They ran away, and they became Hefter. In fact, therefore you wouldn't have to bring them to the Gizmo. So therefore, Rav can't use Shmuel's explanation, therefore he's forced to use his own case of their involving young pigeons. Which actually, Tosfos points out that over here, what we're saying is, so based on that, Tosfos says the same logic. If chickens or geese that belong to a person run away and then go off, they become Hefter, and then the first person who finds them can keep them. But you see over here, once it goes over here, that's what Rav... No, it's the same. No, that's the point. The point is that we see over here that once the chicken runs off, then the Kedusha of Vedic Abayas goes away from it. So by the same logic, if we're talking Cholin, forget Kodshim, if we're talking Cholin, and I have a goose and it runs away, so once it runs away, then it's Hefter and you can take it. So says Tosfos. Okay. Fine.
You can say that only
Gotcha. No. Well, the thing, Vedic Abayas. No, so that's the thing. If we're talking Kedusha Zagruf, then we would say that doesn't apply. That's the thing. Rav is saying Kedusha Zagruf does not go away by running away. Kedusha Zagruf does, because it becomes that. Okay. Yeah. And there's the Poko Kedusha Sayo, the Kedusha goes away, and therefore Chayevus B'Shiloach. Therefore it's Chayev and Shiloach HaKash.
Shmuel.
Shmuel Amma, what would Shmuel answer to that? Why doesn't the Kedusha go away when the animal, when the bird runs away? What the Kedusha is dumb. Why doesn't that go away when it runs away and becomes Hefker? Because he says, it's not really completely Hefker. Kol Hecha De'Isei, wherever that bird is in the world, the Be'i Gaza De'Rachmana Isei, it's still in Hashem's treasury, because the whole world belongs to Hashem. The Tiv Hashem Ha'aretz Moya. So therefore, you, Rav, are telling me that once the bird runs away, then if it flies away, whatever, then it's considered Hefker, therefore it no longer belongs to Hekesh. Wherever it is in the world, it's still in Hashem's treasury. It still belongs to Hashem. It still belongs to Hekdesh. Sure, if you find it, then you have an obligation to return it to Hekdesh. Yeah. Okay, well, that's what Shmuel says. V'chein Amar Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan also agrees with Shmuel. V'makdish tana gota lebedek abayis umarda. That we're talking about where a person was makdish his chicken to bedek abayis, and then it ran off. Amalei Shimon ben Lakish and Rish Lakish uses against Rabbi Yochanan the same argument that Rav is using, that Rav would use against Shmuel. The Kivin Shemor de Pokalek Yeshasa. Once it runs away, shouldn't the Kedusha disappear? Because now it's Hefker. That's like Rav. And the answer is no. Rabbi Yochanan says no. Amalei. So he says to him, no. Bei Gazer de Rachmana Ise. It's still in Hashem's treasury. Yichtiv Hashem Aretzim Lo. So the same, yeah. So Rav and Rish Lakish agree with each other, and Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan. No. These are all Amiroi. Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan and Rish Lakish are all Amiroi. Okay. Fine. However, the Gemara says, "V'rami d'Rav Yechanan ad Rav Yechanan, v'rami d'Rav Shimon Lakish ad Rav Shimon Lakish." We seem to have now a contradiction. Rav Yechanan and Rish Lakish seem to be contradicting themselves based on what they say in a different case. Because we have another discussion that goes like this. Mona zed lebedek abayis. Suppose a person says, this mona should go to bedek abayis. So by saying this mona implies that it means that is chayev achriyosai. The nignavu aynevu. Now suppose that mona was stolen or lost. Rav Yochanan am chayev achriyosai and actually yavar the day gizbar. Rav Yochanan says he's still responsible to make up for it. That's right. Because he has to make up for it. He's chayev achriyosai. Actually above the Gizbar until he actually gives the money to the Gizbar, only then is he exempt from his nether. But Rish Lakish Omer, and Rish Lakish says, Kol Hecha De'Isa, wherever in the world that money is, but Bei Gaza Drach money is, it's in Hashem's treasury, just in Hashem or it's a moya. So therefore, Kasha de Rish Lakish, Ad Rish Lakish, Kasha de Rav Yechanan, Ad Rav Yechanan. So they think, no, these aren't brightest. These are statements of Amiroyim. Statements of Amiroyim, we generally don't flip around because the Amiroyim are expected to be more careful in recording who said what and then clarifying everything. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So Bishlema. Okay. Yeah. Rish Lakish like Kasha. Okay. So within Rish Lakish's opinions, is not a problem because Hamikame Deshamim Rabbi Yechanan Rabbe. All about the Deshamim Rabbi Yechanan Rabbe. There was a point before Rish Lakish heard Rabbi Yechanan's opinion. And then he had his own. Then he had his own opinion. Later on, Rabbi Yechanan told him that. Later on, Rabbi Yechanan informed him of the point about Lashema Arutim Loya, that wherever it is, it's in Hashem's treasury. So then Rish Lakish changed his mind and ended up agreeing with that. So that explains Rish Lakish that it's talking before he changed his mind and after. Ella the Rav Yochanan and the Rav Yochanan Kasha, but you seem to still have a contradiction within Rav Yochanan. Is he saying that whatever it is, it's in Hashem's treasury, or is he saying that you're responsible for it? The answer is the Rav Yochanan and the Rav Yochanan Nami Latasha. Hada Omar Alai, Hada Omar Hare Zu. Because there's a difference whether he says Hare Alai. There's an obligation upon me to bring it. So therefore, fine, it may be in Hashem's treasury, but you have a chovas gavra, you have an obligation on you, on yourself. Well, in both cases, we're talking about a measure. But the difference is, in other words, throughout Shas, we talk about, and we're going to talk about now, that you have the difference between neder and nedava. Neder is an obligation on you. Nedava is something that applies to the chesed, gavra versus chesed, basically, right? So Rabbi Yochanan would say, if he says Hare Olai, if he says I am obligated to bring this animal to bring this mona, let's say, to Beit HaKavayis. So fine, let's say the mona gets lost. So we're saying it's in Dei Gazi D'Rachmana, it's in Hashem's treasury. Rabbi Yochanan would say, very nice, it may be in Hashem's treasury, but you have an obligation to see to it that it gets to the giver. Therefore, you are responsible to make sure that it does, and if you can't find it, you have to bring another mona. So that's when he says Hare Olai. Whereas the other case would be Hodu Amahare Zu, as opposed to if he says this mona should go to heaven.
Yes,
okay, then he has no obligation, and therefore when the mona gets lost, okay, it's in Hashem's treasury. Okay, so the question is the father of Shimon Lakish Afagab the Omar Alai Lam Chayev. So what are you telling me? Rish Lakish would say that even if he says Hare Olai, he's not Chayev. He's not Chayev to make sure it gets to the Beis Hamikdash. V'atanya, or V'atanan, really, it's a Mishnah. We learn in a Mishnah. Ezo neder v'ezo hi nedava. What is the definition of neder? What is the definition of nedava? Neder ha'ima hare olai ola. Nedava ha'ima hare zu ola. Neder is where he says, I am obligated to bring an ola. Nedava is where he says, this is an ola. Uma ben neder la nedava. And the Mishnah continues, what's the actual difference between neder and nedava? Neder, mesa inignava ishavda, if it dies or gets stolen or gets lost, chaya bachrusa, then he's responsible to make up for it. Nedava, on the other hand, if he declared a nedava, hare zu ola, mesa inignava ishavda, ain't a chaya bachrusa. Rish Lakish can't argue with the Mishnah. So how would he, that's a Mishnah, it's the first Mishnah in Kenyan. So we'll get to it at the Shem Yom Kippur time next year. So Rish Lakish can't argue with the Mishnah. We see clearly that if a person says Hare Olai, then he's obligated to chayav bachrusa. So how can Rish Lakish be implying that when he says Hare Olai, he's not chayav bachrusa? Because wherever it is, it's in Hashem's treasury. The answer is Omalach Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish will answer. The difference is like this: Hani Mili Kodshim Mizbeach. That Mishnah is talking about Kodshim that are meant to be offered on the Mizbeach. The Mechuser Hakrov. Where after all, even fine, you can say they're in Hashem's treasury, but ultimately they need to be offered on the Mizbeach, and they haven't been offered on the Mizbeach. So you're responsible for making up for them just for that reason, because you have to make sure that something is being offered on the Mizbeach.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Kodesh Beit HaKavayis, they're not being offered on the Mizbeach anyway. They belong to Hekdesh. They belong to the treasury of the Beis Hamikdash. Fine. So then in that case, so I'm not so worried about that. Even if he says Hare Olai, Rish Lakish would say he's not chayev to make up for it if it gets lost. Because wherever it is, it's in Hashem's treasury. Wherever it is in the world, I'm Hashem Ha'aretz Loya, and therefore wherever it is, he declared it to be Hekdesh, and therefore that's it. It's Hekdesh, and if it doesn't actually end up in the treasury of Hekdesh, then it's not a big deal. Okay, so the question is, V'hotnan. But we learn a Mishnah in Erchin. Ha'oimer shur ze oila bais ze korban. Suppose a person says this ox should be an oila, or this house should be a korban, Now, what do you mean a house being a korban? Rashi points out that sometimes kodesh beit HaKavayis can also be called a korban. We have an example in Parshas Matos at the end of the war with Midian, where the officers of the army come to Moshe and they say, "We'd like to donate the golden ornaments that we captured from Midian." No, the officers of the Jewish people come back victorious from the war. They say to Moshe, "We would like to take the golden ornaments that we took as spoils from Midian, and we'd like to donate them to the Mishkan." And the expression is "Vanakiris Korban Hashem." Now, they're obviously not being offered to the korban. They're not being burnt on the Mizbeach. They go to Kodesh Beit HaKavayis. Nevertheless, they can still be called a korban. So, yeah.
So that's what he
says. So suppose he says this ox should be an arlo, or this house should be a korban, meaning dedek abayis. Nes asher nafal abayis. But now, if the ox dies or the house falls down, ein chay bachrus, and he's not obligated to make up for it. That's it, because again, it was a thing on the chesta. So once the chesta is gone, that's it. He has no further obligation. But sher zeh olai arlo. But if he says this ox is on me an obligation for an arlo, so he uses the word olai, that's on me. Or buys the olai carbon, nesa shurven of labais, chayav b'shalom. Then even if the ox dies or the house collapses, just as shurz the oila, here he says shurz the olai. This ox is upon me an obligation to bring it as an oila. This house is upon me an obligation to give it to Hekdesh. So now if it dies or collapses, chayav b'shalom, then he has to pay. Again, the Mishnah, the Shlokish can't argue with the Mishnah, so what is he going to do with that? The answer is, Rosh Lakish would still make a distinction. Okay, if the ox dies or the house falls down, sure, when you said alive, chayav l'shalom. The lessner, because now they don't exist anymore. Now they don't exist anymore. Abol heichad isnu, but if they still exist, then Rosh Lakish can still say, kol heichad isnu b'vegazad rachmanu isse. Wherever it is, it's in Hashem's treasury. So far, in other words, Rosh Lakish would say like this. If you're saying hare olai when it comes to a korban, sure, you're responsible to make sure that it's actually offered on the mizbeach. If you say hare olai even for kodesh bedek habayis and the thing disappears, the thing is destroyed, sure, you have to make up for it because you can't say it's beigaz rachmaner, it's destroyed. But if it still exists somewhere in the world and you don't know where it is, and it's not kodesh mizbeach, it's only kodesh bedek habayis, no problem. Rish Lakish says you're not responsible to do anything further. Wherever it is, it's in Hashem's treasury.
If it's dead,
that's different. If it's dead, it doesn't exist anymore, even in Hashem's treasury, so therefore, then if you said Hare Olai, then you're chayav. Then you're chayav to make it. If you just said Hare Shurzu Oila, then fine. If it's an Indava, then you're potter anyway. Tosis points out, I mean, when it comes to the Shur, actually, the Shur is Kodesh Mizbeach, so if it gets stolen or whatever, as Shlokas we said before, we'd still say you have to make up for it, but here, we're primarily talking about the house.
Right.
Okay, anyway. Fine. Okay, so far, so good then. So far, we understand what are the cases that Rish Lakish would say that he's potter, and we would say in all those cases, Rav Yechonon would still say he's chayev. The only case Rav Yechonon would say he's potter is if there's no olai at all, if he just said harezu oilo or harezu or harezu or whatever. Okay. So, Amar Rav Hamnuna, so Rav Hamnuna says in this connection, hakol mordim be'erchin, both Rav Yechonon and Rish Lakish are going to agree when it comes to erchin. Well, Erchin specifically is, we'll learn about it in Masech to Erchin, which is going to be in a couple of months, Be'ez Hashem. But, no, well, Erchin means Nesni, yeah, but no, what it means is there's two ways of donating a person's value to Hekdesh. They're called Domim and Erchin. Domim is, you say, for example, my Domim I owe to the Beis Mikdash, or your Domim or whatever. What we do is we have experts evaluate how much is the person worth, like on the slave market or whatever, and that amount is what you have to pay to Hekdesh. As opposed to Erech, is strictly based on age and gender. So you look up in Parashat B'chukah, you say you have a table over there at the beginning of Parashat Zayin or Vayikra, where it's a square, where it mentions over there if it's a male between 20 and 60 years old, then the Erech is 50 shekel, and if it's a female, then it's 30 shekel, and if it's a male between 5 and 20, then the Erech is, what is it over there? Sort of, I guess, in that sense. So it's strictly based on age and gender, nothing else. So that's called Erech. So now, sort of, Hamnuna says, when it comes to Erchin, Afa Gavda Omer Olai, even if the person said Erki Olai or Erech so and so Olai, nevertheless, everybody would agree that Loi Mechayev, he wouldn't be Chayev if the money got lost. He wouldn't be Chayev if the money got lost. Why is that? My timer, Deloi Mitzmar Lei Veloi Olai, because there's no way of expressing this neder without using the word Olai. How else would you say that I'm going to give an Erech to the Beit Mikdash? Hey Chilema. Well, because the normal way is you say Erki Olai, but how else would he say it? Heichi Lema, because after all, how can he say it? Lema Erki, would he say that he's chayev if he just says Erki, my evaluation? Can't. Aman, who is the obligation on? He's just saying Erki. He's not saying who is obligated to give Erki. No, if he just says Erki, or he just says Erech Toini, no. In other words, if I say just Erki, yeah, my Erech, right, that doesn't mean anything. No. Or if I say your Erech, that doesn't mean anything. The only way for it to mean something would be if I said Erki Olai, I am obligated to give my own Erech. Or Erkecha Olai, your Erech, I'm obligated to give your Erech. Or whatever. Yeah. So So it wouldn't work to just say Erki. Lema Erech Pliny, and similarly, if you say the Erech of so-and-so without saying Alai, Amam, and who would be the Chiyuv? Then who would the Chiyuv be on? So there's no way to express it without using the word Alai, and therefore, if I'm going to say, even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that saying the word Alai there doesn't create any greater obligation on you. When it comes to, let's say, a Shur, you have a choice. You can say Harei Alai or Harei Zu. When it comes to Erechim, you don't seem to have. You don't have.
Specification of what?
Because the only way to say what you do with the Erech is to say Alai. Mask if Lord Rava, however, Rava asks on that. Why should that be? Lema Hareini be Erki. Why? The person said, I am in my Erech, meaning implicitly I'm obligated in my Erech, or Hareini be Erech Pliny, or I'm in the Erech of Pliny. So he's able to say that without saying the word a lie. So you should argue, therefore, that there is a difference between saying a lie and not. But oi, Tanya, between Erki, if he says Erki, that means. If he says Be'erki versus Erki Olai, right. Rava is arguing, if he says Be'erki, fine, that should be the equivalent of saying Sherzeh Hekish, Sherzeh Kerbin, whatever. But if he says Erki Olai, that should be the equivalent of saying Sherzeh Olai Kerbin. And he said before that then he's responsible to make sure it gets the Hekish. But Oid Tanya, and besides that, also we learn in a Braisa, Rav Nosson Omer, when the Pasuk says, after the Pasuk describes the various cases of Erchim, and you have a case over there in particular that talks about where a person bought a field, from Hekish. So Reuven had a field that was his ancestral field. Shimon bought it from him, where we know that normally it'll go back to Reuven and Yurgel. Shimon was machdish it to the Beit Mikdash, to Hekish. Later on, Levi goes and buys it back from Hekish. So ultimately, it's going to return to Reuven. So we say what we do is we figure out the amount, how much is it worth from now until the next level, and that's the amount he pays Hekish. So and the Pasuk uses it. Yeah. That's the whole purpose of things. Things that are given to the Bedek HaBayis, either they're going to be used for the actual building of the Beis Hamikdash themselves, for example, stones or gold or what have you, or they're going to be sold. They could use such a field, maybe, for example, let's say for growing wheat for Korbanos or whatever, but if Hekdesh doesn't need it, then yeah, we'll sell it all. Okay, So Rav Nosson Omer, when the Pasuk says V'nosan erkecha b'yomahu kodesh l'Hashem, the Pasuk says he should give the erkecha on that day, which is holy to Hashem. So matam lema, what is it adding by the word erkecha? If we just said that you have to evaluate the value of the field, and that's how much he pays, then of course he's paying the erkecha. So what is that adding? Look, so he's like this, Rav Nosson says, L'fishem afsinu b'akdeshus of Maisris, we find when it comes to Hekdesh, and we find when it comes to Maisr Sheni, shemeschalalin al mois shebacholin, which they can be. They can be mischalal. You can take off the kedusha from them and apply it to something else on money. You remove the kedusha of hekdesh. You deconsecrate the hekdesh or the ma'aser sheni, and the money becomes kodesh instead, right? And nignavoy sha'ovdu ein chayavin machiyosan. And the din with hekdesh and the din with ma'aser sheni is that if the money that you reported them on afterwards got lost or stolen, then you're not chayav machiyosan. So you have, let's say, $100 worth of ma'aser sheni. So you exchange it for $100, and you're going to take that $100 to your shalayim. Then if the money gets lost or whatever, that's it. You're puffer. So therefore, continues the Braisa, Yachol af zekein. You would think the same thing should be true as far as erchin. No, Talmud Bavli, we're not going to say erkecha begomer. Therefore, the pasuk says you have to give the erkecha on that day, and it says kodesh. That has to be kodesh, meaning chulin ad shiyavoy, the day gizbar. Meaning the money of the erchin is considered to be chulin until it actually reaches the gizbar's hand.
As opposed to maaser.
So therefore, well, as opposed to maaser, and maaser doesn't go to the gizbar. But the point is that we see that. So unlike maaser sheni and unlike regular hekdesh, where if the money that you acquired them from gets lost, then that's it. You have no further obligation. But you have no further obligation. But when it comes to erchin, it's not like that. If you said erki olai or bit erki or whatever, you're obligated to make sure the money reaches the gizbar, because the pasuk is implying that the money is considered kodesh only when it actually reaches the gizbar's hand. Up until that point, it's still considered kolin, and therefore you still have your outstanding obligation to hekdesh. So we see from that, Rava says, you can't say like Rav Hamnuna, that Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish would both agree with Erchin that you're not Chayav Bachurisun. Rav Nosson is clearly telling us you are Chayav Bachurisun based on the Pasuk.
Where does he take it from?
Because Rav Nosson has the Erkecha by Yemahu, because the word Erkecha there is extra.
So
So that teaches us that Erkecha Bayim Ahu Kodesh Lashem, when does the Erkecha become Kodesh? Only when it actually reaches the Gizbar's hands.
And therefore, any time.
Meaning, any time before that, then you would have to make sure that you're responsible. Yeah. Ela I Itmar Hochi Itmar. So note, rather, if it was said by Rav Hamnuna, this is what was said. Omer Rav Hamnuna, the other way around, a kol moedim be'erchin, that both Rav Yechanan and Rav Shlokish would agree when it comes to Erchin, to ask up the loy Omer Alai Michayev, that even if he did not say Alai, he would be Chayev. So the opposite of the way we quoted Rav Hamnuna before. Before we quoted him as saying that they both agree, even if you said Alai, you're not Chayev Bach your son. Now we're saying they would both say, even if you did not say a lie, you're still, even if you somehow phrased it some other way, like be'erki or whatever, you'd still be chayav b'achrei your son, just to benosan at the erkecha, and as we just said, it means chol in hand yodchad she'evelei de gizbar, the money is considered chol until it reaches the gizbar's hands, therefore you're responsible for making sure that you have that amount of money becomes kodesh. Regardless of what you said, right, either way, you declare that you're chayav in an erech, therefore you have to make sure that money reaches the gizbar.
Because of
the word harach.
That's the
halacha. Okay. As far as the previous discussion of Yechanan versus Rish Lakish, the halacha is usually like the Yechanan, and that's how it is over here. So in the case of mona lebedek habayis, yeah, you'd be chayav b'achrei son. Then the Mishnah said, "Chumra b'kitzur the chulah." That we said, "There's a chumra in kitzur adam over shaluach hakan, and there's a chumra in shaluach hakan over kitzur adam." In particular, we said kitzur adam applies whether the animal or the bird is pre-prepared for you, and shaluach hakan only applies if you happen upon. If it's not mezumah,
now.
So how do we know? There's tanan abana. Chumra kitzur adam, whether it's mezumah or not, shaluach hakan only if it's mezumah, only if it's not mezumah. So how do we know this? Tanan Rabbanan. The pasuk says ki yikore kan sipor lofanecha. The pasuk says if there should happen to be a bird nest in front of you, ma tamud loymar. What are we learning from that when it says ki yikore? So like this, lefi shenema shaleach shalach ha'aim. Since the pasuk says you have to send away the mother bird, and shaleach shalach is an infinitive, it's a double expression, so you would think that maybe you're obligated to go and search after the mitzvah. You would think that you have to wander around on the hills and on the mountains and on the hills Kadesh Yim Satan in order to find a nest. In other words, we know there are some mitzvahs that you're obligated to do that. For example, you know, let's say tefillin, for example. It's not just if you happen to have tefillin, you put them on, and if not, you're not. You're obligated to get a pair of tefillin, and then if you don't have them, you borrow them or whatever. And the same thing with a lot of other mitzvahs. So you would think if it's a shaleach shalach, means the same thing. Under all circumstances, you're required to do shaluach kan, and if you don't have a nest available, then you have to go searching for one. No. No, therefore the pasuk starts off kiyikore, if it happens to be, implying b'ma'ur l'fanecha, only if it happens to be in front of you. Now this affects... Okay, we'll get to what Shalach teaches us later, but this affects this point that we were talking about at the beginning of the parak about the Chavis Yoru versus the Chassam Sofer and others, whether always the Chavis Yoru says, you see from this Gemara proof for his opinion. He says, because look, we're saying that you're not obligated to go running around on the mountains and the hills in order to find the nest, but implying though that if you found the nest, you're obligated to do Shaloh HaKan, whether you want the contents or not. So therefore, that would seem to be a proof for his point. Okay, the counter argument is okay. The Gemara is just mentioning this case that you're not obligated to go around that you're not obligated to run around on the hills and the mountains and whatever. But it would mean that even if you did happen to find one, you're not necessarily obligated to do shaluach hakan unless you actually want the eggs or the chicks.
It seems to be denying that you do find one.
No, so according to that way of looking at it, kiyakore would mean that if you happen to find one and you want the eggs and the chicks, then you're obligated. Not necessarily would it mean that if you don't need the eggs or the chicks, that you should be obligated to do shaloh hakan. Not necessarily. Okay.
Kiikare happens, the shalach, right? So there is that idea.
And one idea actually is, you know, we were talking about before the reasons behind the mitzvah. So one point is, if you say that the reason behind the mitzvah is, like the Zohar says, because you want to arouse Rachmim and Shemayim for the Jewish people, well, then it should be, like the Chabad Yoreh says, that you have to do it no matter what, because you want to, because you want to be able to arouse that Rachmim. On the other hand, if you say, like the Ramban says, that it's in order to inculcate Rachmim in ourselves, or the other reasons, because you want to respect the motherhood of you, then not necessarily should it be that you have to do it regardless. Anyway. Okay, so that's what ki yikore means. You're not obligated to go searching around in the mountains for it. If you happen to find the nest, then you have an opportunity to do the mitzvah. Okay. The next word in the pasuk is kan. The next word in the pasuk is kan, which means mikolmok. It means whatever kind of nest it is, even if it's a nest that only has. Now, even though the words in the pasuk are efroichim ebeit sim, which means chicks or eggs in the plural. So you would think you only have if you have two chicks or two eggs in there. So the word kan teaches us mikol mokim, any kind of nest. Even if there's only one chick or one egg in there, then you still chayev in shalor kan. Sipur, then the pasuk continues with the word sipur. The next continues with the word sipur. The word sipur means tahor v'lo tmeya. The word sipur specifically means a kosher species, not a non-kosher species, which later on the Gemara will discuss how we know that, where we see that sipur specifically means kosher species. Then the pasuk continues lefanecha. If you find it before you, that means b'rishus ha'yachid. That would mean a scenario where you find it in rishus ha'rabim. Now again, it would be a case where you don't have kinyan chaser because it's not a chaser amishtameres. It's not something that's guarded. It's not something that has a fence around it. It's something that people can wander into. But no, it's an open chaser. Let's say that belongs to you, yeah, or an orchard or whatever, yeah. So that would be lefanecha b'rishus ha'yachid. But derech, when the pasuk continues, you find it on the road. That means rishos harabim. That means also if you find it in rishos harabim. But ilonis minayin. How do we know you're also chayv if you find the nest on a tree? Tamad lama b'cholay. That's why the pasuk continues. If you find it on a tree. The boris shichen or ma'aris minayin. How do we know it's also the case if you find it in a water cistern, in a water pit? Boris shichen or ma'aris. Well, you could find the nest in there. Yeah, well, maybe not when it's full of water, but let's say, for example, when the pit is empty. Yeah, a bird might nest in there. Birdus are round, shichin are long, myris are covered. So anyway, how do you know you're also chayv in shalor hakan if you find... Birdus are round, shichin are long, or rectangular. Yeah, and then ma'aris are roofed, like cave. The word ma'ara literally means a cave. So suppose you find a nest in one of those. How do you know you're chayav? Therefore, the pasuk says, or that you find it on the ground. Okay, so the braisa continues. Well, after all, if in the end we're saying al ha'aretz means wherever you find it, even if you find it in a water pit or whatever, lefanecha baderech lamali, then why, after all, do we need the word lefanecha and baderech? If we said that lefanecha means you find it in rishus ha'yachid, and baderech means you find it on rishus ha'rabim, but then we're saying that oy al ha'aretz means wherever you find it. So then what are lefanecha and baderech? The answer is loy malach, because it tells you like this. Ma derech she'in kinei biyadcha, because just like when it's on a road, then it's not in your possession. It's not mezuman. It's not you don't have a kinyan over it, because in rishus harabim you never kinyan something in rishus harabim.
Someone else is rishus
harabim. No, what do you mean? Someone else. By definition, rishus harabim doesn't belong to anybody. Public, it's a rishus harabim.
Yes.
So if the rishus harabim, you don't own it because you can't make a kinyan on it over there.
Right.
So ma derech shein konri biyotcha, just like on a road, it's not konri to you. Ah kol shein konri biyotcha. The same way, when are you chayev? Only if the nest is not already acquired by you. Mikan omru, from here is where the chachamim said what we said in our Mishnah. Yoyne, or similar thing. So what we said in our Mishnah. Yoyne shoyvach, bird, doves that nest in a birdhouse. The yone aliyah, or doves that nest in an attic, shekinenu v'tfichin, or if they nest in tfichin. Tfichin are Rashi. Yeah, we've had the term before. Tfichin means basically earthenware jugs. Earthenware jugs. So Rashi describes they take like little jugs and build them into a wall, I guess for decoration or for storage or whatever. So sometimes birds would use those as a convenient place to nest. Or if they nest in towers or mansions or whatever, va'avazin b'tana gerlin shekinin or b'pardes, or geese or chickens that made a nest in an orchard. In all those cases, chayav b'shaloch. In all those cases, you chayav b'shaloch hakan because it's not konri to you. You haven't acquired it yet because it's not in a part of your reshus where you can be konri. Avo, But if the birds nested in your house, how to see it? Well, the same thing. The how to see it doves, as we said in the Mishnah, which are fully domesticated, then potter mishaluach, then you potter because then you were already cleaning them.
Whereas the previous cases,
the other ones are semi-domesticated. The ones that nest in fishim or whatever, they're only semi-domesticated. Yeah, they're somewhat feral. Yeah, they're only semi-domesticated. They're not mezuman. You can't catch them easily. Therefore, you chayim. Okay, so thus far the Braisa, and we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with analyzing the Braisa, including also some very interesting and somewhat mysterious agadza. Two things, well, a few things. One, we're going to have a case of you find a nest on a person's head. Yes. Then we're going to talk about a remez to a number of figures in Tanakh, remezing to them in the Torah. And then we're going to talk about birds that were trained to speak propaganda. So we'll get to all that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Parrots?
And parrots? Well, he was talking about doves, but whatever. Yeah. Okay.